as a subcommittee, if I can get these two ladies on my left to be quiet. Kidding, of course.
No.
This is the subcommittee of Ways and Means on Education. And Chris, I believe you're number one on the agenda, so if you'd please commence, appreciate it. Welcome to Chris and his entourage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chris Durham, Department of Education. We're here today to proceed through our offices of the Department Operations and our grants with the Curriculum Instruction Field Services. Follow up a little bit of yesterday, provided to you through your staff, the agenda for the next state board meeting, which I believe is April 26th,
yes.
Which you asked for.
Yes.
You also asked questions regarding CIM and CAM, or the, excuse me, CAM, what they look like in the school, the 21st century schools. We're working on collecting that data and should have that shortly back to the committee. Today, if I could point you in our blue book, the briefing document, to page 47 is the beginning of the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services, which displays the organization chart and that office highlighted. The budget for that office is on page 48. I could highlight a few things for you to put in perspective the type of funding and activities, the grant activities and the grant funding we have. The top of page 48 displays the governor's recommended budget for, in bold, department operations of about $6.4 million, a small amount of other funds, and federal funds of 3.6 approximately for a little over $10 million for that office. Then going down, you heard yesterday and the day before about the program option package. We placed it in the budget in this office for just as a placeholder, the teacher administrator mentor program. And then we have grant and aid with a general fund, which includes that policy option package for the teacher mentor of about $718,000 is included in the $1.8 million general fund grant and aid. And then there were some packages that were one-time items that had been deleted from the budget. Utilization of community arts and culture, a general fund $200,000 package has been phased out. American sports education $50,000 was phased out. Then the student driver training bill passed last legislative session that transferred responsibility, fiscal and program responsibility from the Department of Education to Department of Transportation, and so that limitation is phased out to $2.4 million, and that was done mid-biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Troy.
Student driver training does continue, though. It's just being sponsored by Department of Transportation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Troy, that's correct.
And funding is in their budget to do it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Troy, that's correct.
Is it general funds again?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troy, no, it is other funds from driver's license. There's a portion of a driver's license fee that goes to this, I believe.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, before we get off that page, the top, the third item, federal funds, $3,000,005. Do those funds come in a categorical grant directly to the department, or is it a flat fund that you have some discretion as to where to use that money?
Mr. Chair, it's a combination of several grants that they're also listed at the bottom of the page, the grant and aid portion. We receive a small amount in many cases to administer the grants, but it's such things as Eisenhower Professional Development, Reading Excellence, and Goals 2000. We receive some administrative funds to operate those grant programs. They're not discretionary. They come with strings mm-hmm. that are targeted towards those specific activities.
And that's what we call categorical grants.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Yeah. So that $3,000,005 then basically is to administer the federal funds that we see listed below there?
Mr. Chair, essentially that's true. There are some activities that Joanne will get into on how we administer and what flexibility we have in our use of the state portion of those grants.
If we can see an opportunity to better utilize that $3,000,005, for instance, is it possible to get a waiver from the federal government to use those funds in a different category, or is it, are they very strict and very specific as to what you do with them?
Mr. Chair, those grants are provided by law that have responsibilities to carry out that generally are not subject to the waiver, because of the, you can't waive the purpose of a grant. Sometimes you could waive the administration, but these funds I don't believe would be subject to a waiver, so that we could have discretion on how we use these other than what the law says in each particular case.
That's interesting. You say you can't waiver the purpose of the grant. Why else would you want to waiver it if you couldn't use it for another purpose?
Mr. Chair, there are ways that we, some components, my understanding is from the U.S. Department of Education, you can't change anything that's specific in the law that a grant may require, such as how you allocate the funds for the purpose. But there are ways of which you administer and certain requirements that can be waived that make it easier for districts to use those funds at their level. But we can't seek to make them totally discretionary for our purposes.
Okay. All right. Continue.
Down at the bottom of the page is a listing of our grant and aid programs comprising $27.7 million of funds that go to school districts, with first one being the staff development grants, which included a policy option package for $1.8 million. A million of that was staff development that we use this current biennium to support and provide small grants to the low-performing schools. And then we have a series of federal grants that I referred to earlier that are targeted use, as you can see from the description, gives you an idea of the purposes of those grants.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Trill.
Why do we have two program option packages, one number 105, Teacher Administrator Mentor Program, number 305, Teacher Mentor Program? The amounts are different, 718.184, 781.816. Why the two there, and what are you doing? What's going on? Is there more than one program, or what?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I'm glad you noticed that. I didn't mention Package 305. They are the same program. However, the Package 105 relates to activities that the Department Operations will provide through staff and through contract work. The Package 305 are grants that we would give to school districts.
Okay.
But it's for the same purpose. The budget instructions
I'm glad
require...
you told us that, because it doesn't say that anyway, so it's good to know. Because I thought maybe it was the same package, just with different numbers, and a mistake. But it is the same program, but part of it is for internal staff to manage the program, and the other is a grant part.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, that's correct.
And they're about the same amount of money.
Exactly. Coincidentally, the amounts look similar. They are not typos. Those are the exact amount.
Thank you. Okay, continue.
Clarification.
Yes,
if I might, Mr.
Senator
Chair. Help me understand the money, the 718 in Package 105, that's not just to train your internal staff. That includes training that your staff would provide to the districts. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, this was the policy option package that we presented over the last couple of days, and the dollars in the one package would be direct grants to school districts. The dollars in the other package provided for training and services for mentors, for web-based resources and program that would be available to districts, not just those districts with mentor programs, but others as well, to provide support for some of the programs we indicated would be essential in schools where they have significant achievement gaps, where we'd be addressing particular needs in that area, and in some of our rural and remote schools where perhaps you would not have a mentor, a math teacher would be a mentor, and you would have to establish a program that would be a bit more costly, perhaps, to ensure that that teacher was well-trained. I think I gave you the example of a teacher in Monument working with someone at Eastern Oregon University.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Tripp.
Are both of these program option packages recommended by the governor?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, yes, it actually is one one program option package programmatically, but budgetarily, it's broken into two components.
It's a $1,400,000,000 or something like that, or I mean, $1,400,000.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trova, yes, rounded to 1.5.
1.5, okay.
Continue.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over the presentation to Mrs. Flint now.
Good. Joanne, welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I guess, still. Joanne Flint, Oregon Department of Education, Associate Superintendent for the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services. The Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services works to promote the success of every Oregon student, whether they're studying in a private school, home school, public school, alternative school, or charter school. We accomplish this goal through a combination of service to teachers, service to schools, and statewide leadership. We've provided a handout for you, which you can recognize, I think, by its colors. And all the other documents in your folders are sample materials that I may reference during the presentation, but this is the handout that might be most useful to you in following what I have to say. I'll give you a couple minutes to pull that out. It should be on the top. The first page of the handout we've provided identifies the number of students in each of the programs for which we provide services. Services which reach over 610,000 students. I'd like to begin by discussing the services we provide to teachers on the second page. These again are teachers in all of the kinds of schools. Some highlights of services to teachers. We work in preparing new teachers in partnerships with the schools of education. We provided a brochure of a series of workshops that is occurring this spring. This is called Kids First, Surviving Your First Year, a Toolbox for New Teachers. This brochure describes workshops that get new teachers up to speed during their final term in school, assuring they're armed with the latest research and tools available. And it also gives them an opportunity to ask some of the many questions that arise as they enter our schools.
Joanne, excuse me, but
yes.
I notice you have a service to teachers serving all kids, private school teachers. What kind of, do we charge them tuition in the private schools to serve the teachers?
Mr. Chair, no, we don't, and in my presentation, I'll give you some details about the kind of services we provide.
Okay. On the front page, you're saying you serve 40,000 private school students, so I'll be anxious to hear what
yes.
you do.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Continuing professional development, the ongoing training for educators. We have provided...
Chair?
Yes, Senator Utrell.
Give us some idea. You know, we're having these seminars and we're getting a toolbox. What's in the toolbox?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, in the toolbox we have a copy of the standards documents along with some model lessons that teachers might use, some work that was done through the University of Oregon to develop a process for showing teachers how to teach in a standards-based system to assure that rather than selecting, for example, topics for instruction that might be, for example, dinosaurs or planets, that we ask teachers to look at the concept that we want students to learn and to focus the instruction on that. Now, that might very well include, in the area of science, study of the planets, but we certainly ask them to focus on a skill or a concept that's critical for them to take the next step in their learning. We also provide assistance in learning how to use the web to find additional resources, a number of those kind of activities, and we find that those hands-on kind of helpful resources, as well as in some ways just knowing where do I call when I need help, and those phone numbers and addresses and names can be very helpful to a new teacher starting out. Continuing professional development, in addition, we provide every fall a caravan that
is very beneficial, I think, to not only educators but also to parents. It gives them an opportunity to discuss the latest instructional resources and how they can be used in the classroom. This occurs prior to a school district investing in those resources. This caravan covers the entire state and provides training for teachers by experts in the field each fall in usually a half a dozen or so areas of the state, and sometimes more than that. We also provide regional workshops, and we have some people on the road. We often refer to them as road shows, but what that means is that we go out across the state. Our staff was in Pendleton, LeGrand, and has moved on to Nyssa and the Ontario area. And what they are doing is taking the latest resources in four areas, the arts, physical education, second language, and instructional technology, providing training by specialists in those areas for teachers. These are some areas that we have a high degree of interest in now. Art partnerships, instructional technology is an area where teachers have really felt that they could use some additional in-service, and certainly in the area of physical education, where we're just adopting standards, there's a lot of help that's available. In addition to that, we provide teaching resources. In fact, we have a document that has gone to teachers around the state on that roadshow, Instructional Technology Ideas and Resources for Oregon Teachers. This is actually in book form, about half this big in what we give teachers, so that it's a little handier. But we found out yesterday that they all went on the road, so we brought you a copy of it. We have a sampler of our teaching and learning to standards. This is a sampler of a document that is distributed every May, providing from the curriculum specialists at the Department of Education the latest research in each of the fields, teaching resources and lesson plans that are helpful. Very often, we also will have resources that help teachers in involving parents in their students' education, some tips for parents and how to assist in the classroom instruction as well. Those seem to be some of our biggest hits, in fact. In addition to that, we have worked over the last couple of years to provide effective instructional practices. And this yellow document, Keeping Kids Connected, is probably the publication that has received the most requests and we've had to do the most reprinting of. And I think you may understand why, how schools and teachers can help all students feel good about school and why that matters. This document really addresses many of the concerns about keeping our kids connected to school, making sure that they want to come to school, that every single school child that walks through our halls in our school buildings has someone who is aware of them and paying attention to them, and that we don't end up with students who are disenfranchised for one reason or another and feel like they are not a part of the school, because we do know that it makes a huge difference if you feel like you belong in the learning that occurs.
Joanne, I want to interrupt you a minute. I'm hoping to get a profound statement here. In your opinion, Representative Hobson, this type of material, does that really help classroom teacher improve the quality of education, do a better job of teaching?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you looking again for profoundness coming from me, because I was sitting here dying to support them in this. It certainly does. And several things I noticed just skimming through. Some of this is new, May 2000, and I actually wasn't familiar with it. A couple of things I noticed. Number one, they referenced, and pardon the expression, I hope nobody's listening, that shouldn't be, stole things from other areas. Maybe you go ahead and get the copyright things. So
yes,
okay.
Yes, we do.
Like they haven't invented the wheel. Another thing, we have a number of people in our field, as in every field, who don't take to technology quite as quickly. All of this material, or most of it, is already on the web. and teachers can go in and find sample lesson plans. I noticed in the one here it describes how to do the scoring of a scoring guide, those kinds of things. In a way, that's already available on the internet, and I would hope in a year or two, but I'm more practical and realistic than I used to be. Eventually, we won't need to print all this stuff. It'll all be there, and teachers will routinely access it. It's very helpful. Even for experienced teachers, this has some really new ideas they can look at and say, oh, gee, I never thought of that, and find out that, oh, NISA is already doing something. I'm going to call over there. And I just heard of something this morning that was so exciting. Apparently, one of the committees on the Senate side, and I don't recall which one it was, they actually hooked up a VTEL connection between Park Rose, Condon, five other, and shared things where they weren't having Spanish offered. I think it was in Christian, and the other schools were trying to figure out how they could do it over the internet or how they could. The communications, and this is just one part of it, but kind of from our leadership, is invaluable. Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that because I was sitting here just smiling inside myself.
Sure. Don't hesitate to speak up if I don't ask soon.
Well, what an open forum that is,
yes,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. I know you well enough that you'll not take advantage of it. Make it a disadvantage. Yeah, thank you. Joanne, that was nice testimony to what you're doing there.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I would just mention to you that we're working very hard to make it possible for teachers to get these resources very effectively and easily. We are pressing them on CDs and putting them on our website as well with active live links, which really helps a lot for the busy classroom teacher or busy administrator. But we've discovered that when we've tried to come out second with a print document, that we still have so many teachers that, quite frankly, I think just want to be able to take it home and read it at night because they don't have time during the school day when they have children that they'd rather be spending time with. So we're discovering that it may be the case that we will continue to need to do some print documents. In terms of the next section, I'd like to describe some of the services we provide to schools, and this is where I believe I'll be able to give you some information about the private school service.
You say next section of the
section? Yes.
Page?
Green, service to schools, page 4, and moving on to page 5.
Got it.
In terms of planning and assistance for school improvement, again, online printed and fiscal resources in this area. We have a consolidated district improvement planning guide. This is a legislative requirement that school districts submit their improvement plans once every 2 years. And this is the document that gives the first guidance, and we usually have more than one effort in this area, including a great deal of technical assistance in all areas of the state. But this is the first document that comes out, essentially giving people some assistance in planning for their update of their improvement plans. We focus on developing measurable goals, something that school districts are becoming increasingly more adept at, which is a good thing, developing an action plan based on data. We've put together a searchable database for something called the Match Gap Analysis, which allows districts to identify an area such as mobility, poverty, or size that's unique to them, then compare the spending or allocation of time or staff against similar but higher performing schools. That can be a tremendous help.
Are you on a page? Or?
I'm on page 5, and I'm talking about planning and assistance for school improvement.
Okay, adding to it.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that we hear from schools an awful lot is it would really be helpful if we had a way to find out where someone else was having successes in areas where we're struggling. And this resource is a searchable database on the Oregon Department of Education website that our staff, when they worked with schools, listened to what people said they wanted, came back and worked with the technology people in the department then and were able to put together. We also have, and this is brand new, and you're going to see the word draft in big letters on it, assessment tools for the quality indicators in the quality education model. This is the document that is a bit of a sampler in that area. And you'll notice that it has school review tools, and on the third page, quality indicators. In the quality education model, there are areas identified that represent what a good quality school is. And
let me interrupt you there. QEM, so this work that we're looking at here is a result of what we've been doing on the QEM?
Mr. Chair, it's tied to the quality education model indicators. In that model, and if I can take the liberty to do this very in a very brief way here, we have inputs that we fund, and such things as teacher salaries and desks and textbooks. And the goal is to have students, for example, in the third and fifth grade, 90% of them meet the reading standards. We all know that funding things at a certain level can't guarantee that all 90% of the students in all schools are going to meet those. There are elements of quality, indicators of quality, based on effective schools research that we know play a large factor in that, such as quality instruction, leadership, a variety of different areas. What we've done is taken those quality indicators and, with the help of experts from across the nation and some extremely good work by 10 pilot districts in Oregon that worked with their communities on this, we have put together essentially a scoring guide. We found that worked very well to improve instruction in math and writing, and we've employed the same principle here. These scoring guides allow us to give a more complete picture of school performance, providing qualitative data that can be used, that can be written in a report. In addition to that, it provides quantitative data that can be compared across time, so a school can begin to get a picture of where their strengths are and where they might want to make improvements. We have a guest with us that at the end of my presentation will be able to give you a bit of a better idea, I think, of how that played out in a school district. A comprehensive school review process, among other things, can provide a written report to a local board on how effectively their district improvement plan or school improvement plan is being carried out. I hope I haven't overwhelmed you with too much detail here, and I'd be glad to talk to you more about this, but I think maybe after I have, after superintendent talks a little bit about it, you'll have a clearer picture. I was anxious to share this work with you because I think that it will be valuable for schools as they strive to meet the goals that have been established by the state legislature.
That's all very good, Joanne. Would you say that what you've presented to us here is a result of the initiative of the department, or is this a result of a school reform, the law we passed in 91, or a combination of both? Or where do you get your initiative, your direction to do what you have just showed us here?
Mr. Chair, I believe that it's a combination of the efforts of the legislature over a decade of interest in reforming schools and providing tools such as the Database Initiative Project that have made more data available. I believe it's an effort on the part of the department to provide statewide leadership and very specifically listen to what school districts say they need, so that the tools that we develop are tools that districts say, boy, if I had this, it would help me to improve instruction for my students. In the area of direct customer assistance, I'd like to give you something that I think is a pretty good example of what the specialists in our office frequently do. Over 26,000 telephone requests for assistance are handled annually by our staff. An example of the calls to one specialist on one day are as follows, and this isn't all of them, but it will give you an idea. An inquiry from a school regarding how to develop a better high school class schedule. A call from a parent wanting to know the process to meet the compulsory education laws while homeschooling their children. An employer who was checking to see if a private school was registered. A parent called, outraged that their children's school district had denied their request for an inter-district transfer. A district official contacted us regarding waiver of the instructional hours requirement because of a broken furnace. A call from a parent regarding excessive discipline. A call from a school regarding alternatives required for students who are expelled because of weapons violations. Additionally, specialists from the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services made over 1,000 in-person visits to schools across the state this last year. On page 6, you'll notice we give some specific detail in terms of our service to public schools. We provide curriculum support in all areas. We complete a regular review and revision, including a public review with parents in libraries, often across the state, to assure that our standards are not only high quality, but they're serving students well. We assist teachers in creating skills-based, high attainable curriculum and develop models of research for schools. We assure that districts have the flexibility to improve student performance through federal and state waivers. The office administers waivers on administrative rules, as well as some statutory waivers. We work to encourage up-to-date instructional materials in every child's classroom. We coordinate state award programs. We have staff that is very excited and enthusiastic and works each year very hard to coordinate the state spelling contest, which many children enjoy, Blue Ribbon Schools. We investigate citizen complaints about schools and districts. In our high schools, where some of our greatest challenges lie.
Contests and other contests open to all students, private schools, home schools, as well as public schools.
Yes, Senator Troe, it certainly is, and we have schools from homeschoolers and private school students participate every year. We design and administer a high-performance learning community grant aimed at comprehensive school reform. This is an area where we're doing a great deal of work because we've discovered that many of our schools that are struggling the most are high schools. In middle schools, we're working to focus middle school reform efforts to assure student learning continues when hormones strike, and that can be a challenge. We provide model programs for children experiencing significant delays in reading, an area where we are finding that many students whose reading difficulties have somehow been masked earlier are really struggling once they hit middle school. In elementary
school. Phonics. Is it possible if some kid is struggling and needs phonics can get it?
Yes, Senator Troe, we are very aware that in some areas with some students, the skills instruction is an essential component, one that some students have missed and can benefit them. That's true with some students. We also find that with other students, it's an area of comprehension that's never been taught that needs to be addressed.
I know that when I was preparing to be a teacher, I took psychology of reading, and although certainly we looked at phonics and with some students it's successful, or other methods that seem to work better with different kinds of students depending on your needs. But those who need phonics do have access to it.
Absolutely. We've concentrated efforts at the elementary level to assure that reading, the gateway to learning, has strong hinges and the gate is swinging freely with all children passing through. This has been a very big emphasis with our elementary programs. In the area of charter schools, in less than 2 years, 12 charter schools, and I'm on page 11 now, sponsored by local districts, are in operation statewide. 26 more are in development. We're proud to report that 38 charter starter grants have been awarded. We provide direct assistance to charter developers and school districts in setting up charter schools. And within the next couple of weeks, we'll have a charter school handbook out that I believe will provide a lot of really good support and information to those who are interested in starting charter schools. It's based on a task force group that's worked together over the last couple of years and has been putting down on paper those things that they've found can often be stumbling blocks.
We often mediate...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the on-site review of the charter schools, since this is the first year, are those being done on all 12 of them this year, or is it on a rotational basis?
I apologize, but I'm not sure whether I can just speak directly to each of you. So, Representative Hobson, you have the gavel. Forgive me, Senator Troy. I missed that passing. Senator Turow, Representative Hobson, we actually do visit all of our charter schools each year. Our specialists do that, as well as some of our regional representatives, in terms of evaluation. That process is one that is conducted a little bit more systematically and formally, but we do visit the charter schools.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What if you find a charter school that isn't really performing satisfactorily as far as student achievement and organization and paying the bills and those kinds of things?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Dawn Billings if she can address that. I wish Randy Harnish was here.
I can wait on that.
What I would say to you is that we've been very, very fortunate in this state, and I think a lot of it can be attributed to the process that was put in place by the legislature and the attention that went into that. We've not had difficulties with charter schools like so many states have. They have been built in a quality way and put together to serve the needs of students, and we feel very positive about them. But I know that there are specific things that we do have in place to address that. I could get that information to you if you'd like.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just off the top of my head.
Representative, I think that's good information. Maybe we can get it, because... it may well be that the charters are doing fine now, but we know that in other states there have been sometimes problems, that the charter school has not functioned well, and there needs to be some way of identifying that and helping the school if it needs help, or if it's going to continue to fail in many ways, then maybe discontinuing it.
In addition, we often mediate between charter school developers and school districts to assure that no efforts aimed at providing greater opportunities for students are needlessly lost. We've found that that mediation and that discussion along the way with the developers and the school districts has been very beneficial in assuring that we keep moving along and think of kids first. In the area of public and private alternative schools, we ensure public and registered private alternative schools meet safety standards, and we direct assistance through research into effective practices. A document that I shared with you, I believe, during the interim was Alternatives and Opportunity for a Lifetime, that really encourages the development of alternative programs for students that individually meet their needs. And we're sponsoring, the end of this month, an alternative education conference, bringing together programs statewide. This year's conference will center on program evaluation, and this is the flyer about that program, and it's coming up, so if you are able to attend, we'd love to have your presence at that. The private school area is one where we do a great deal of work. We have a private school advisory committee that we work very closely with. We ensure private schools are safe through an annual review of the safety inspection documents. We ensure private school staff meet instructor standards. We work with statewide private school organizations to maintain a balance between autonomy of the private schools and legal requirements. We publish a directory of registered private schools, which is the blue document we've provided, so that you can see we have quite a few of them here in Oregon. We have a very good relationship, a very strong relationship with the private school organizations in the state.
Do you have every private school registered?
Senator Troy, we do not have every private school registered. Private schools that are not registered may be good quality schools, but those that we have in this book are schools that we do know. Because of the registration process, we can assure safety. And
is there no requirement that every school is registered?
There is no, Senator Troy, there's no requirement that every school register.
So it's, do they volunteer in registration? Is that the way it works?
Yes, it's a voluntary process.
You can't list some school you know exists that hasn't volunteered.
Senator Tro, that's true. In the area of homeschool, we note we have roughly 12,000 students that are homeschooled in the state of Oregon. We provide assistance and information as well as guidelines to ESD staff in implementing homeschool registration. We have a homeschool task force that we work with, and they are a very good group to work with, and we have been able to maintain a very good relationship with them. And they've been essentially very, very supportive of the work of the department to assure that we are hearing all of those things that would create a better situation for their students in the state. We provide homeschool parents with curriculum guides on request and a number of other resources. In fact, we receive over 20 requests a month for services such as the curriculum guides. They're some of our most frequent hits to the website, and we often will have calls, follow-up calls from them asking for additional information in that area. We like to think that we're providing good service to our homeschool students. We host an annual meeting of the ESD homeschool coordinators. It will be held in June this year, and an example of the types of topics that are on the agenda for this meeting are an OSAA, Oregon School Activities Association, discussion regarding the access for homeschool students to public school activities. And we try to make sure that anything that is surfaced by our homeschool task force is on the agenda, and there's an opportunity to share that information fully across the state.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Joanne, can I request that you make sure that those ESD people know that you have curriculum available for homeschoolers? Because in my 14 years of homeschooling, I never had a single offer from the Lynn Benton ESD for curriculum. Nothing in writing at all.
Senator Tro, Representative Close will be sure to do that. That's a great agenda topic for the meeting. The final area I'd like to discuss is the orange page.
Before we leave homeschooling, is there a significant percentage of homeschoolers who are utilizing the public schools for some part of their education?
Senator Tro, I will find out what kind of information we have available on that. I don't know the percentages, but it's something that we may have some information on. I don't know.
I have anecdotal evidence that some of them use it maybe for music, or some of it use the public schools for athletics or things like that. And I wondered if we did have some information on that, so we could.
Mr. Chair, if I could comment, I think it varies by district, but in my district, they're very open to letting us take one class, two classes, three. My daughter has five. My son's took four. We were able to select which classes, which instructors we had, which teachers, and it's been very helpful.
Sounds like it's very cooperative. Yeah, I presume that's what's happening pretty much.
Senator Tro, you still have the gavel. Yes. We've actually found that the cooperation and collaboration in providing services to students, educational services to students, as well as activities, extracurricular and co-curricular activities, is increasing between our homeschoolers and public schools. A good thing. In the area of statewide leadership, due in large part to the support we've received from the legislature and the state board, we've been able to carry out some mandated responsibilities in the in key service areas such as curriculum and school improvement. This can be a very important activity, as I think you may well imagine, in times of budget cuts when specialists in particular areas are not available, especially with some of our small school districts. We find that the staff at the department is in fact the curriculum staff of the district as well. In the area of the arts, we have some, I think, very exciting accomplishments to report. We have scheduled this year, this summer, the Oregon Teacher Arts Institute. 100 teachers representing all regions of the state will attend this one-week summer training in effective arts instruction. We've increased the number of professional artists in the classroom who work directly with students. We've shared models of arts curricula to support arts instruction. It's a good deal of what's going on around the state as we speak on our roadshow. We are providing teaching resources in the arts, but most importantly, I'm very pleased to tell you that a $25,000 investment on the part of state funds from our office in the Arts Institute has netted private contributions to the tune of $75,000. This would not have been possible without the statewide leadership of the curriculum person in our office. Those dollars go directly to serve teachers' training. And I think that this is the kind of partnership that we can increasingly expect to see by leadership at people at the state level, where they're able to generate interest from people who have money to give to support students' education. Investing.
Joanne, at what grade level is that generally that you're talking about the arts and the implementation of that?
Senator Hartung, it's a K-12 program. We'll be focusing primarily on elementary and middle school students in this summer's institute. Investing in state leadership, I believe, really does pay dividends. In the area of science,
Yes, I believe arts and culture, we cut out a program. Are we phasing it out, the utilization of community arts and culture in your budget? Why has that happened? Tell us about that program.
Senator Hartung, Senator Troe, I can tell you programmatically, and Chris may want to add, in terms of the budget, it was funded for one biennium. It was a grant and aid program.
So one time?
For arts education, and I think our guest will be able to speak a little bit more specifically about
that.
You're
going to deal with that one? Okay.
In the area of science, I think that we have a similar theme where statewide leadership matters. We probably have had our most successful outreach in this area, with 34 training sessions regionally for teachers across the state. These are top quality training sessions provided by expert teachers for teachers right near home, and they are continuing programs so that a teacher goes, they learn how to teach something effectively, they return back to that group, share their what they have done and how well it's worked, and continue to have support from teachers who are experts in that area. It's been a very effective model for training, upgrading the training of science in science education across the state. In addition, we have partnerships in the area of science through our state curriculum specialist in science, a partnership with the Oregon Science Teachers Association, Wells Fargo, the Oregon State University, and the National Science Foundation. Our science specialist is busy at work writing another grant now to increase the training that is available for science teachers in the state. And we continue to believe that having someone who is trained and very committed to promoting that kind of training for teachers and professional development pays dividends. In the area of reading, an area that is near and dear to all of our hearts, and most specifically, Stan Bunn, our state superintendent. With his leadership, we've been able to provide reading institutes to train 130 teachers in research-based effective reading instruction, teachers from across the state that have gone into their classrooms and also into their schools to provide additional reading support to teachers that they work with. We have a developing partnership, a very interesting one, with the University of Oregon and Los Angeles Unified School District for web-based teacher training and instruction resources so that a teacher that is struggling with a particular reading difficulty will be able to access on the web a video stream that will tell them how to assist that particular child who's having difficulty. It is a very, very promising way to use technology that will, I think, be of great service to teachers in Oregon. We were able to secure in the first round, the very first round, funds for the Reading Excellence Act, bringing $6 million into the state to improve reading instruction, K-3. We held, just this last Friday, our most successful reading summit ever with 1,200 participants, up from the 1,900 and some we had the year before. These participants were able to experience five of the top reading specialists, researchers in the country, and to spend not just half an hour listening to them, but to spend 2 hours, 2.5 hours, really talking to them about what they had learned and were learning about teaching reading to our young children, to our middle school students, and to our high school students. Turning that into effective classroom strategies that will help all of our students be more effective readers. And finally, I'd like to share with you our goals for the next biennium. We have an ambitious goal, I'm afraid, more ambitious perhaps even than some of our policy leaders. We want to have every child reading by grade level at the end of third grade. We would rather risk not meeting this than to cap it at 90%. We're committed to finding the keys to unlock the world of print for every single child, and we'd rather fall short and have tried on every single child.
You'll pardon this expression, but you must be going to use more phonics.
Senator Hartung, we're going to use anything and everything we can, including perhaps some resources from Los Angeles Unified School District.
Right. You got to get kids to spend time reading and people to read to them and listen to them. And a lot of kids get taught to read, but then they forget how because they don't read.
Sure.
And that's part of the problem.
Senator Hartung, Senator Troe, it's a very compelling story to listen to our state superintendent talk about the impact that a teacher in eighth grade that read to him after lunch every day had on his reading. And I think that's something that we really do need to reinforce.
Mm-hmm.
Continuous improvement in providing high-quality, timely customer service. We receive a lot of phone calls and a lot of requests for help, as evidenced by customer feedback on pre- and post-assessments. We would like to be able to represent to you that we had continued to improve the quality and timeliness of our customer service. And thirdly, an increase in the availability of research and resources supporting student success. I'd like to look at our distribution methods in this area. One of our greatest frustrations is talking to a classroom teacher and having them tell us that they have not received a resource that we know we've made available. We don't want to hear that anymore. We want to find a way to assure that every teacher has access to those things that we are providing for them to help. And we'd like to have, certainly as a goal, to assure that we are using every single distribution method possible and every way to reach them so that every classroom teacher does have the benefit of those things that we know and are learning and can provide for them to assist them. And I'd like, if I could, to bring up now our couple of guests who will talk specifically about a couple of areas that we provide services. I could ask them to come forward.
Good. Thank you.
While they're walking up here, I'll introduce them.
Okay.
First, I'd like to introduce Sharon Morgan, who is with the Oregon Alliance for Arts Education, one of our arts partners. And she works very closely with Rex Krause, our arts specialist. And we'll ask her to speak, as well as to my right, Don Grodick, who is the superintendent of Nissa School District, a very ambitious superintendent, and one that I worry a little bit, to tell you the truth, because whenever we have specialists go over to his district and meet him and talk to him, his leadership is so fantastic that I'm always a little bit worried that we'll lose some of our specialists in Nissa School District, and it's only the fact that it's a bit remote that I think saves me some. So I'm pleased to have him here. He'll speak some about the services, school improvement services that we provide. With that, I think I'll turn it over to you, Sharon. And
thank you, Joanne. Chairman Hartung and members, honorable members of the subcommittee. I'm Sharon Morgan. I'm executive director of the Oregon Alliance for Arts Education. We're a statewide service organization serving the arts education community and enlarging that community. I have to say that the Oregon Department of Education, and in particular, the Curriculum and Field Services Department, are our number one partner, along with the Oregon Arts Commission. And I describe the arts education community as extending to all the parents who have their children in bands and choir, the parents who are sending their kids to kindergarten and having that work displayed by restaurants and banks in their local communities, as well as the professional arts community and the avocational communities of artists and audience members throughout the state. There really is probably no area in the state that has greater partnerships with the Department of Education than the arts community, partly because the resources for the arts in schools have been shallow, and the resources for the arts in communities have been really critically engaged in helping to fill that gap. What we know is that we can fill a gap, but we cannot help, we cannot be responsible for children, students meeting the arts content standards, that we're part of the answer, but not the whole answer. The whole answer really is in a sequential program in schools. The teacher is key. So it has been a wonderful partnership with the department to bring into alignment the work that community organizations and artists are doing along with teachers. And that professional development that has happened informally has been consistently made at a very professional level because of the work of your field services representative. You probably weren't aware last year, but there was a little cheer that went up across the state when Rex's time was increased from 0.2 to 0.5. I personally have experienced 0.10 or 10, no points involved in his commitment to helping those of us in the field who are his partners. So my remarks about the work in arts education and the department's role is they're good partners, they're good stewards, and they are great leaders. The partnership is certainly evidenced by the work that they do with the Arts Commission and with my organization, the Alliance, attending meetings, providing consistent, current information, participating on committees, workshops, panels, providing professional development to the people who are going to be working directly with teachers and with school districts, as well as with lay organizations. Good stewards. Several times you've mentioned that $200,000 that was a partnership between cultural organizations and professional development. I know that Rex has made an on-site review of each of those granted programs. And in my checking with people who have shared in those programs, what we are hearing is that $200,000 leveraged so much professional development, not only for the teachers who were partners with organizations like Maryhill and the Coos Art Museum, and in your area, the Maritime Museum, but the outputs, the sophisticated, credible, wonderful work that is being done by their students is so noticeably, even to the uninformed eye or ear, of the level of work that students are being able to do. So that stewardship is very important. And then in leadership, the increase in time that Rex has been able to give has resulted in some very important initiatives responding to amorphous desires of the community, both of educators and of the professional arts field. But how could that coalesce into a really meaningful, focused, professional level kinds of programs? So this summer, when we initiate the first Oregon Teacher Art Institute with 100 elementary teachers, and we're starting with elementary because those critical assessments, which will begin in school year 2001, 2002 of assessing arts achievement for all students across the state will happen at 3rd, 5th, 8th, and 10th grade. And many elementary teachers did not receive appropriate level instruction in their pre-service work. So that's where we're going to start and then expand it to specialists and to middle and to those high school students that would like. Those 10 teachers from each of the 10 regions that are described by the Oregon Arts Commission's Art Education Network are being chosen in a partnership that is really unique in that the OEA, the Oregon Education Association, is working with the coordinators of the Regional Arts Education Network to make the invitation to those 10 teachers. Our requirement of them is to go back to their districts and to share and promulgate the information and the teaching techniques. Our commitment, the Alliance's commitment and the Department of Education and our other partner, the Oregon Arts Commission's commitment, is to keep a network alive and develop them into a strong cadre that has support from the department and from the other partners so that that work will eddy out and support other teachers and then bring them back for the next 2 years. Joanne mentioned that we have generated $75,000. Actually, we have commitments for over 3 years, and I think by the end of the granting requests that have gone out, including one to the National Endowment for the Arts, we'll have well over $300,000 to support this effort. Another initiative that has been brought forth by the leadership of the department is in the area of creative dramatics. And that's exciting because it is for the first time supported by very significant research. Harvard's Project Zero has been looking at the effects of arts education in terms of transferring and influencing academic achievement in other areas. And they came to the conclusion that significant quantitative research has not been done to verify what we all know in terms of anecdotal stories, except in three areas. And one of those was creative dramatics' effect on reading. And knowing of Superintendent Bunn's priority for reading and the importance of that for student achievement, we are also working with the department to bring professional creative dramatic drama providers into professional development training for teachers and for community organizations so that there will be a unified, seamless fabric and resources for communities to use that in a more effective way in reading, not only for elementary students, but to remediate reading experiences for older students. It's an exciting and challenging time. Next year's assessments are beginning to become, the awareness in the education community is finally happening. I was in a meeting last month with five education deans who were talking about their pre-service work that they do in the arts. And admittedly, they were not happy with the level, but are besieged by many other requirements and budgetary kinds of things. One school does a weekend workshop. One school has a 16-hour requirement of integrated work. Vast differences. All of them thought it was not necessarily as important as some of their other work. But when I said, next year, all students in Oregon will be assessed in arts education at grades 3, 5, 8, and 10, there was an audible and certainly visual awareness that there was really a need for that. And so they are beginning to work with our organization and the department to look at ways that they can effectively integrate arts education and in the pre-service work that they give to their teachers. It's a wonderful partnership. I think there will be a great deal of distress among school districts because of these first assessments. But a baseline, I want to compliment certainly the legislature and very much the leadership of the department for holding the line, because we must begin somewhere. And my earnest and personal belief is that we are going to see student achievement take some giant strides. The arts will probably not get credit for all of it, but they will certainly be very much a part of it, as well as the steadfastness in this department's leadership in holding to higher standards and withstanding the kind of threats and criticisms that they've had from people who have not understood that these first assessments are baseline, reaching to a much higher standard for all students across our state. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Joanne?
Now, Senator, if I could introduce Don Graddick, the superintendent of NISA School District.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, honorable committee members. My name is Don Graddick, for the record. I am the superintendent of NISA School District. I took over that position in July. When I came to the district, it had a middle school that would be rated low performing for 2 years in a row. I was brought there by the school board to raise achievement scores and improve the environment of the district. As a new superintendent coming in, when you're given that task and challenge, you look for all available resources. And so when Joanne Flint and Don Billings called early in the fall and talked about a pilot program in which the Department of Education would come into a district, provide a team to evaluate and go into the classroom, monitor your programs, and make suggestions in a collaborative effort with the district, I jumped at the chance. For some superintendents, that's a little risky to have the Department of Education come in. I looked at it as an opportunity. I'll go through just briefly a little bit of the process. It included a pre-visit in which they came over, acquainted themselves with the district, compiled data, met with administrators, some teachers, and got a good feeling for the district. At that time, they went back and then compiled some more data, came back over for the visit. They brought a team. They stayed in our district for a week. They went into every classroom in our middle school and our high school for an entire class period. They evaluated special programs, ESL programs, special education, alternative school. If you're not aware, with NISA, we have about a 60% Hispanic population and a significant migrant population also. So we are a unique district. In addition to observing, interviewing teachers, administrators, students, they had two parent meetings. One was conducted entirely in Spanish. In addition, and I think a key component, they evaluated our student work. That's where as Don Billings would say, the rubber meets the road. And so they were able to look at work, and they just did an outstanding job. I think one of the things that I was most impressed with during this effort was their work ethic. They arrived at our school every morning by 7 or 7:30. They didn't leave our school probably until 5 o'clock, where they went to their motel. They had a report prepared for us in the morning. They did an exit interview with the administration every day. And when the final visit was over, they prepared a draft. We reviewed the draft. They went back, and anything that was in the draft that the school district may have disagreed with, we were able to contest that. I'd like to say that in a week, everything that they saw in the district that needed to be done, that was not going well, they were right on. In addition to identifying the weaknesses, they also identified the strengths. And so they confirmed what we were doing right. But more importantly, where our weaknesses were, they identified those weaknesses, and then in addition, just didn't say, here you are, here's your weaknesses, and walked away. They were able to provide resources, data, best practices, other school districts that are doing a good job in those areas to put us in contact with, and they continue to collaborate with our district. It was unbelievable what they did. And it's really helping. I think we would have got there possibly without their help, but bottom line, this is speeding up the process. In December, every school district in the state of Oregon will be required to provide a building and district plan of improvement for their school. This has really sped up the process. Most school districts who are struggling, they do not have the adequate resources to go through and do what the department accomplished in a week, in a short time, saved hours and hours and hours of work for the school district. And bottom line, students are going to improve their achievement quicker. In fact, we've just received some unofficial test scores for our district, and in every test area so far that's been tested, all of our scores have improved dramatically. And it's not only helping our middle school, but we're using these best practices with our elementary school and with our high school.
Sure.
Senator Troll.
What's the occasion for the visit, the fact that you had not been evaluated well and you had low scores in your evaluation, so they came to help, or was that the occasion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll, yes, it was. In addition, it is a pilot study program. Mm-hmm. They didn't call up and say, hey, we're coming because you have low test scores. Mm-hmm. They called up and said, basically, here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help school districts. Are you interested in this opportunity?
That's great.
But yes, it was based on low performance.
So things have really improved, and it was well worth it.
Dramatically. And I think as a new superintendent coming in, it really helped confirm my perceptions of the district. They met with school board members, and a wonderful resource. And I would truly hope and encourage them to be able to continue that program. And I think also, not only that, but I think it's an opportunity for the department to also school districts. I think we can share, and I would like to share, hopefully when our district gets to be exactly where I want it to be able, there are other districts out there just like us with similar problems across the state, and for people who have actually went through the process and then be able to come and share with other school districts across the state.
That's good. Is it possible for the board to do this very often for schools? Were you in just one of those occasions, or are they out there doing this with other districts who are in need?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll, I believe I might pass them a slip, but I know that they've done it in one other district, and I believe that they also have another school targeted.
Don,
I was just going to say, I would hope, since we are evaluating schools and we're making some fairly strong statements about schools, and some of them are substandard and need help, that this is a way of doing that, and I'm glad you're off to a good start doing it.
Where did you come from when you came to NISA?
Mr. Chairman, I was a superintendent of the Power School District, which is also one of the New Century schools.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You ever run across Superintendent Hobson along the way?
Yes, I have ran across Superintendent Hobson. She's everywhere.
That's right. And we're using her, too. We're going to have her validate everything that we've heard you say.
Eight-man football at NISA, too?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll, Powers won the state championship 3 years in a row, and they currently hold the Oregon record for most consecutive wins at 44.
Wow.
High school.
That's pretty good.
Right. See, Powers is out of Roseburg?
Yes. It's about, it's just about in between Coos Bay and Roseburg, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Just off the coast.
What was the population of your, of that district, Powers district?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, approximately 170.
And NISA is how many?
NISA School District has approximately 1,200 students, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Sounds very good. Now, let's see, Joanne, where are you getting the money to do this?
Mr. Chair, we have conducted this as essentially some of these services we certainly expect to be able to provide are the development of the tools that I shared with you, is part of our effort to try to continue to develop tools that are resources that all schools can use. We're currently having a conversation with the education service districts about how we can build capacity statewide so that people can do these external reviews as a professional development opportunity, as well as use those tools within their districts. I think that that holds a lot of potential. I also believe that it is a service that would, as the superintendent has indicated, would be very beneficial for all low-performing schools as a part of the low-performing schools package. And as you can see, it's a fairly labor-intensive effort. It's not something that could be done in every single school district. But we believe that with a combination of looking at this as a professional development opportunity, partnering with education service districts, and having some resources to work specifically in targeted ways with low-performing schools, that we can, in fact, substantially improve the performance of students in our schools. But more importantly, I think those quality indicators are the things that all parents, when they go into schools, want to be able to say, yes, these are the things that I feel good about in this school. I can look at this school and say, boy, it's got great instruction. The teachers really believe that all students can learn. The leadership is top quality, and just as Don Grodek has guts for kids, we call it. And I think that there's a tremendous amount of potential to expand the model in ways that we can, in fact, impact all of those schools that we need to.
How do you identify the schools that you want to go to?
Senator Hartung, initially the contact was made to those schools that were identified as low performing on the report card. We felt that was where we wanted to start, although we do have plans to visit some high performing schools as well, because what we want to do is assure that we continue to get as many best or effective practices to share with low performing schools, and as we are looking continually at improving the performance of some of our lower schools.
Tell me again how many people are on the team that you send, like you sent to NISA. How many people are involved?
Senator Hartung, it can vary with the size of the school, anywhere from 3 or 4 to, in this case, 7. We had it, NISA.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Trump,
in a school like NISA where you have a rather substantial Hispanic population, if you're going to improve the overall scoring and attendance and all those things that you evaluate, what sorts of things were you able to say, this is what you need to do that's different than what you've been doing? What were the big things that really made a difference?
Senator Hartung, Senator Troy, I'd like to ask Don Billings to come up because she was at the visit, and perhaps between Don and Don, they can give you a fairly good idea.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troy, do you want me to continue? One of the areas that specifically to help our migrant Hispanic ESL population, the department was able to provide us with information that our ESL program was not sufficient and was not adequately meeting the needs of students.
Okay. So what could you do to improve that?
Overhaul our ESL program. we're currently the department has provided us with different districts who have adequate ESL programs, and there are some model programs throughout the country that we're currently having meetings, we're looking at, and we are going to be on board for next year. In addition to those students, many of those students are in special education and alternative programs, which also directly influence the achievement of those students, and the district was deficient in many of those areas.
Mr. Chair, I'm really pleased that the department's giving this kind of positive help. It seems to me that we talk about the possibility of using punishment as a way to get at the problem. I think positive help is the way to get at it, and hopefully we don't have to use punishment, because I don't think that gets you there. I think the positive help does. I think most of these schools really want to improve. It's just they need that help.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one thing I have down here. I think it's really important that schools are held accountable. And I believe that this pilot study allows districts and provides them with the resources, yet at the same time, it instills a sense of accountability. And I know before we came here and we met, the question was asked, well, what happens if we come in, we do this review process, suggestions and resources are provided to a school district and nothing happens? And they said, well, what's your answer going to be? My answer would be you need to probably change the leadership in that school district.
Joanne, is the department in a position to, for instance, evaluate Don's program to improve ESL and take whatever you learn from that and, you know, assist like the Hillsborough district and the Beaverton district, or we're really having trouble getting a ESL program going that satisfies all the players? Do you have the resources to be able to do that?
Senator Hartung, we can do it on a spot basis, and we hope with the low-performing schools package to be able to do that on a consistent basis, at least with those schools, to have some assurance that we can certainly do that. We did. One of the pilots actually was in the Hillsborough District, and it was with one of their schools where they were frustrated that they had not been able to achieve improved performance, and they tried intervention after intervention, and we believe we have been able to identify some areas, and in fact, working with the superintendent, have some strategies that we'll be employing, in particular working with teachers just after school's out this year in training areas. So I would say that while we can't do it everywhere across the state, obviously because of capacity, I have to share something with you. When we began to experience a shortage of personnel for services necessary to be provided, which is certainly something that all schools, I think, are familiar with earlier in this decade, we had to learn that, I guess it's something that business learned. A fluid organization works on a project and then reassigns staff and continues to look at what needs to be done and reemploy staff in those areas. And out of that process, learning to be fluid and to maximize our resources, target them, focus them, and choose the next area where we really need to make an impact, as opposed to perhaps a somewhat easier route, to tell you the truth, of sustaining a person working on a project over a long haul with perhaps, in the end, less benefit long term than if you were to redeploy your resources on a targeted focused area again. I'll tell you that we have learned some strategies that are very useful to us, and one of those is where can we get partners, how can we train other people, how can we look, for example, at the school review process as a professional development opportunity for other educators. How can we make the kind of school review process and use of those instruments that I've shared with you, those assessment instruments for school quality, how can we help that to become a culture within our school system, something that's routinely done to take the data, look at it, and determine what the next step is? So I will tell you that we can do spot target work. What we can't do is provide this service to every school district in the state that might request it. We'll have to make some choices. What we do think we have to do is to provide that service to our low-performing schools at the point that we developed a report card in this state and labeled those schools, and in essence those communities. I believe that we have a responsibility to follow through and assure that we are attending not only to the public accountability piece, but also to the provision of capacity or assistance to make the changes that need to be made. And I also believe but over a period of not too many years, you will begin to see the benefits of that investment because you will have educators and school buildings that are used to looking at their performance and used to making the changes that need to be made to improve. I don't know if that answers it well enough, but I'll just tell you that we constantly make choices, as does everyone else, about our initiatives.
Sure.
Senator Trump.
It is important, though, that you have resources that are available so you can do that and find the people that help and the expertise you need. And I don't know if your budget really has that much flexibility in terms of resources so that you can get people out for those districts or not.
Senator Hartung, Senator Trowe, we cannot currently meet the requests. We are making choices. The choices we're most uncomfortable with are those choices in the low-performing school service.
My question was, do you have the resources to get where you need to go and where you determine you should go?
Senator Hartung, Senator Trowe, the budget we've provided is in recognition of the state of the economy currently, and we feel that we have got to have resources for low-performing schools, and that's the request we've put in.
Yes, anything else? Mm-hmm.
Great silent partner. Okay. But I'll tell you, even your LFO staff would attest to the fact that she's not silent normally, and she is certainly an extremely powerful force in improving schools in the state. Dawn Billings,
sure.
Those of you who didn't get to meet her, thank you.
Joanne, do you have an opportunity, or does the superintendent, to, you know, really get a close look at other states, you know, that are trying to do what we're doing, state departments, and what kind of success or failure they might have in their efforts?
Senator Hartung, we work very closely with counterparts in other states to make sure that we're learning from them. In fact, we were involved in a project with 10 states and leading reform states over the course of the last several years to find out just what each one of us was learning so that we didn't have to, any of us, make the same mistake twice. That was the intention. I believe we stay up with that quite well. I'd kind of like to share something I'm quite proud of. Though that sample packet I provided you with the diagnostic assessment school review tools based on our quality indicators in the quality education model, those particular instruments we have been asked to present at a national large-scale assessment conference, and I believe that it's quite a tribute to our staff, because there are many states who have been working to develop the kind of assessment tools that will allow someone within the school or an external party to go in and use that assessment tool not only to provide qualitative information and a report to a local board or an administrator, but to provide quantitative information that can benchmark where a school is in terms of performance and show what kind of improvement gains you get over time. Those particular instruments, I believe, are going to propel the schools in Oregon to greater improvement, just as our writing scoring guides and some of our assessments have in other areas as well. And we're quite proud of them, because they're not things, they're things that we created. And I must share with you, with the help of school districts in a project, many of these assessment tools were things that some staff, for example, in the Canby School District was involved in very early on. We asked if they would return to their community, to their parents, and to their staff and say, if you had to prove that you were an effective school district, how would you do that? What would be evidence that you, in fact, had an effective school? And from that question, they asked people across their community, their students, their staff, and came up with those things. And it's from that early work that we've been able to design and develop these tools that we think will be useful, perhaps to legislators, but most importantly, to to those people who are closest to the kids, trying to make the schools better and better. And they also address, and I really want to emphasize this because I think this is a closely tied to our dropout and low-performing schools packages. They really make sure that every single child is attended to in that building, and that achievement gaps are something that doesn't hide. It's out there right in the front, and that it gets the attention that it needs, and that we begin to look at the individual performance of students and attend to the needs of all students within the school building. And we're very encouraged that these instruments will assist in making that achievement gap something that we don't have to look at very many more years in this state.
Good. Any questions or comments?
No, and I'm sorry, but I do have a question.
Certainly.
Joanne's here before us, and as I saw curriculum, it jogs my little memory to ask the question if and when the department is planning to work on or implement the legislation that was passed last session that deals with the curriculum development that includes the history of all ethnic groups in the state of Oregon. And so it's one of my passions to make sure that children in our state have the advantage of learning about all of its citizens. And so I just wonder where that is in on your radar screen.
Senator Hartung, Representative Winters, I would very much like to have, I don't have anyone here today who can give you the update on that, but I'd like to make sure that when the Office of Student Services present, we can incorporate that into that presentation, because that is very, very important and something we want to make sure that we bring forward and give you an update on.
I don't know if any other states have, in a very comprehensive way, are planning to do that. I think Oregon, here again, is probably on the cutting edge of leading this effort.
Senator Hartung, Representative Winters, I believe our effort is really one that's quite far ahead of many other states. Visionary, perhaps.
Thank you. Representative Hobson, can you give us about 3 minutes of what you think we heard here today?
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. You're so kind to me. And I really appreciate that. I was sitting here being so thankful for all the things, and you know how so often happens when you participate in something, you fail to really appreciate it and remind yourself of all the benefits that you have from a group, an association, a club, in this case an agency. And I found myself externally to some extent, but certainly internally, nodding my head. And the good superintendent from NISA started to say, Don and I came together actually on a service learning component that we've talked about, getting kids into different means of activity and different means of learning and education. And I believe, as Representative Winters pointed out, the department is very good, sometimes through direction, but also with their contacts on a national level, of bringing forth to we educators all of these various and different things. And I said it earlier, and I say it again, sometimes we in education are our own worst enemies. And Joanne and I actually had a conversation right before we started, and I was not totally agreeing with her, but I was somewhat, she said, you know, this is healthy for us. This is an opportunity to get the hard questions and to think, yeah, do we really do that? Do we really need to do that? And what do we do? So, no, it was very reflective. Thank you. Are you making fun of me, Mr. Chair?
No.
Are you making fun of me? Good.
He asked if he could ask a question, and I said, sure, I don't want to disappoint Sue. He's got more questions than anybody here.
Yeah, let's get, we have a
Representative question.
This actually isn't my question.
Oh.
It's someone else's question, but it was raised by a school board member I know that made a statement with regard to a very popular program, the Oregon Pre-K program, and the question was related to the student performance after a few years in school, and the comment was made, well, gee, Yes, indeed, with pre-K, it seems like some of the students arrive better prepared than some of the students that start without pre-K. But gosh, within a couple of years, everyone's on the same page. There doesn't seem to be any difference in standards. And at some point, it'd be interesting to hear, is that an indictment of the existing school, or is that a testimony to pre-K and the fact that we have problems afterwards, or does it indicate that they're really not a whole lot better prepared? I guess you won't need to do that in 5 minutes, but I'd be interested.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I can actually indicate to you that we will have a presentation that will address that, and I think tomorrow, okay. So.
Sure. One of my thoughts on that question is that kids that go to pre-K are often very vulnerable kids, and if they didn't have that, they wouldn't get that good start. And even though the other kids catch up with them, they got a good start because of that. And so otherwise, they would be probably a way down and not performing well at all.
I assume that would be fine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I think some of our elementary principals are the best testimony to the value of the Oregon pre-K program.
Other questions or comments?
No, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.